The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and you're tuned in to another episode of Our Community. You know, we have many wonderful things here in our remote rural area. Majestic redwoods, the wild Pacific Ocean, world-class fishing, hiking, and some of the most gorgeous scenery in the world. But one thing we don't have enough of is good health care. This has been an ongoing problem here for years, as doctors are few, and even fewer are taking new patients. One recent positive thing that has happened is the opening of a new urgent care center in Crescent City called Redwood Urgent Care. My guest today is Lynn Szabo, who is a physician's assistant at Redwood Urgent Care. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Lynn, I definitely want to hear all about the urgent care facility, but when we were chatting a little bit before we started this, you said that they call you the doctor?
I'm actually the mother of the clinic.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, the mother of the clinic. So,
and I think every clinic needs a mother, right? I mean, we all need mothers.
I try my best. Certainly a challenge. But this clinic is actually the private practice of Dr. Wahadula Wahadula, who is a physician who has worked in this community before. He worked at Sutter as a hospitalist and also at Mad River and St. Joe's as a hospitalist.
What is a hospitalist?
A hospitalist is the physician who takes care of the sickest people who are in the hospital.
Ah, okay.
So sometimes they can also even be, more difficult subspecialty called intensivist.
Oh,
so they're the
okay.
ones that you want at your loved one's bedside when things are really not going well. And they sometimes sit by the bedside all night long and
wow.
and oftentimes keep people alive.
So that sounds like a very special kind of a person to me that would be willing to do that, would have the compassion and the caring to do that.
Definitely. Not only is he extremely intelligent, very well educated, he comes from a huge family of doctors. In fact, his father was setting up hospitals and clinics, and then also training non-medical staff to provide medical services in his home country of Afghanistan.
Oh, he's from Afghanistan.
He's a naturalized American citizen.
Okay.
So he, I think, has taken his father and his family's passion, and he's brought it here to the North Coast. Although currently he's practicing in Sacramento, it's always his memory that this coast was underserved. So he started Redwood Urgent Care in Eureka, and that's the mother clinic, and he has intention to have four clinics.
Wow.
So Fortuna, Eureka, McKinleyville, and Crescent City, and Crescent City is his first attempt at expansion.
So how long has the clinic been in Eureka?
The Eureka clinic's been open for about 4 years and has been very successful.
That's
and,
great.
Yeah. So we see all types of like minor, not really emergencies, but things that you want to be seen sooner than a couple of weeks, for example.
Right.
You know, a cooking accident where a laceration,
right.
you know, happened, or a fall, perhaps, where somebody needs to have some x-rays, or a child who's ill on Christmas Eve, or, you know, somebody who might have influenza, maybe thinking they have pneumonia.
Right.
So
I'm intrigued with this doctor. I'm intrigued with him. So he sounds great. So did his whole family come from Afghanistan, or is it just him? Or
I think that his whole family came. He has many mm-hmm. of his siblings are physicians. I think one's a computer programmer. But this is kind of a family effort that Dr. Wahadula is leading. But I think that they're also following their father's vision mm-hmm. of expanding healthcare into areas where it's desperately needed.
And it certainly is needed in this area. I mean, that seems to be the big thing that we don't have. I mean, we're surrounded by all the beauty that you could possibly imagine, I mean, you can shop on the internet for stuff for, you know, instead of going to the mall or whatever, but you can't really substitute internet shopping for healthcare. I mean, you can't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's
this is a nationwide problem. Rural areas are definitely underrepresented with medical care, and most of the medical care, I think, in rural areas comes mostly from family practice physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants, probably nurse midwives too. I don't want to leave any of my colleagues out, but you know, we don't have specialists. We don't have the kind of resources maybe diagnostically that a large hospital would draw. And oftentimes, I think the community is used to driving a long way on dangerous mountain roads to get, basic health care.
Which is just sad to me.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's just sad.
There's many factors for that, but I suspect that when people graduate from medical school, and many medical students and also physician assistant nurse practitioners kind of gravitate toward more specialized types of medicine where they have to have resources, and maybe they have to be in an area that pays a little better than a rural area, and then there's certainly financial pressures for them to settle urbanly or suburbanly to start their initial practices.
But, I mean, not only are they usually in incredible debt when they get out, but, I'm just looking at the housing crunch that we have here. There's nowhere for them to live.
Yeah, that has been a problem. That's definitely a problem. And I think they look at education systems for their children, and they probably look at there's personalized things in the community, like perhaps a particular religious community that they're drawn to, or maybe hoping for a college community. A lot of them like to surf too.
Kayak. There is always that.
Yeah, so
maybe fishing. Maybe some fishing.
Oh yeah, we dangle that in front of them.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But I think there's also kind of the misinformation there that rural patients are harder to deal with, that somehow they're less educated, which clearly is untrue. They're less internet savvy. Perhaps they're more focused on things that are not as good for their health, you know, like cigarette smoking or drinking too much or street drugs. I have not found that to be true up here at all, I have to say. But I also think, what better place to make a difference?
Yeah, no kidding.
So
right.
If somebody wanted to settle down in a community and fulfill that passion that burns inside of most first-year medical students, this would be a great place to do it.
I think that the medical profession, you know, to be part of that, you really have to have a calling. You know, you really have to want to serve people, to take care of people.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's been this whole kind of shift to, you know, if you're a doctor, then, you know, you're going to make a lot of money. And it's, to me, it's the wrong shift. It's right. Not what people who are interested in healthcare right. should be focused on.
Well, there are definitely people who go into it for that, but it is it attracts very, very intelligent people for a grueling course of study that leaves them incredibly in debt. And when you do decide where to establish a practice, I think you also think about how you want to fit in the community. And a lot of doctors perhaps like to be more anonymous and a little bit under the radar. I actually appreciate that my community kind of has a really great balance in recognizing that I'm a healthcare provider and then not necessarily telling me about their cough when I'm, you know, looking at lettuce and Safeway.
So, there is always that.
Right. So, you know, I definitely feel valued and I appreciate that they give me time to recuperate, and I actually work 50 hours a week, and I am wondering
really?
Why I can't work 60.
Oh, so. Good grief.
Well, I really like it. It's not work if you love it.
Yes, no, okay. That's absolutely true. And, you know, I'd love to know a little bit about you. You know, where do you come from?
Where I came
where
from?
Did you grow up, you know?
I grew up in the Bay Area.
Did you?
But okay. I always wanted to be in Humboldt County, and I I kind of puttered around at HSU until somebody said, you should be a PA. And then I felt like at that point my destiny was secure. So I went to PA school in 1985 at Duke University Medical Center, which is where PAs were kind of invented, one of the places where they were invented. And I was really lucky to have some of my early mentors be the people who created my profession.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I took their passion was to create kind of a second set of hands and kind of an information gathering tool that a doctor could use and extend their abilities into rural communities. So I came back up to Humboldt County with those skills and then also overlapped Del Norte. My career has had like multiple jobs at one time because I kind of like, I like the variety of medicine. I like that every day is fascinating.
So what exactly is a physician's assistant?
A physician's assistant is a specially trained medical professional, and we have skills to take histories, to do exams, to order lab work or x-rays, to make assessments of people based on that, and to make plans or recommendations in getting them diagnosed and treated. So there's a lot of different kinds of physician's assistants. A lot of us are specialized in hospitals and emergency rooms and orthopedics. A lot of us are family practice. I've done just a little bit of everything, pretty much.
And what are the big differences between a physician assistant and a physician?
We can do about 75% of what a family practice physician can do.
Wow.
And we are... it's said we are in a dependent role, but I see myself more as Dr. Wahadula's kind of eyes and hands. And if I ever have a question and, maybe don't know how to anticipate how he would handle a case, he's pretty much immediately available to me. I am his first PA. He is my 52nd supervising physician.
My goodness.
And I would say it's coming along quite nicely.
Lynn, that's a lot. 52?
Well, they've been in practice 31 years.
Oh, my
word. So I graduated in 1987.
Wow.
So
you've seen just about everything then?
I suppose so. I haven't worked in the OR very much. So I'm actually OB, but I've done pretty much everything else.
And you love it?
Well, it's like being in the best candy store in the world. And really, that's why I like urgent care the best, because there really is nothing better than to optimally address what the patient is concerned about with the best resources in the most efficient manner possible. That's what I do in urgent care. That's why I love it so much.
That's just great.
Yeah.
And it really is so critical in this area, because getting in to see a doctor... I mean, assuming that you can even find one that is still taking new patients
is difficult.
Yeah. I mean, you could wait a couple of weeks before you get in.
I also think, too, that rural people might be a little bit, I have a theory that they might be a little bit different from the urban population in that I think they're more independent patients. I think they're not as anchored in time. Like, I would say my life is divided up into like little 15-minute slots. But I could appreciate that somebody else might not necessarily be as in tune with remembering that they have an appointment in 3 months, at 2:45 on a Wednesday, because their life isn't really like that.
Right.
And
right.
So that's another reason I really like urgent care is we are available for anybody who wants to walk in if they're on their way to Walmart to run an errand and they happen to notice my green Subaru and they decided that that's a reminder they want to talk to me about something, then they pull over and, they can come in and talk to me and maybe get some labs done if that's what they need or, a diagnosis. Or, healthcare problems pop up for some things like really acutely, like we're teetering on the end of or the beginning of our flu season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine after Thanksgiving travel, we're going to have quite a few people that come down with it. And you don't want to wait 3 months to have Mm-mm. that addressed.
No.
So
no.
That's why I like urgent care.
And I I had a personal experience where my husband ended up with a urinary tract infection and didn't know it,
right
until mm-hmm. it got so bad that he fell out of bed on the floor, and we had to call 911.
He was quite sick.
Very sick. And, you know, those kind of things, they can happen, and you don't notice that you're getting sick. You just somehow don't notice that you're getting sick until you really are sick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Another good thing about urgent care is that, especially my time here in the Pacific Northwest, is that I've seen generations of people grow up. And so now my medical assistant, who is fluent in Spanish, actually was a patient of mine when she was, you know, 7 or 8, and on up into a teenager. And to work with her right now is an incredible delight.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I'm really quite lucky.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. We have a number of really experienced and remarkable people working for us. And they'd be people that are familiar. That's the other thing, is I think sometimes there's doctors who are hired from out of the area, maybe not familiar with the community, maybe not expected to stay long. And sometimes it's easier to know that the person you saw 2 years ago and last month is going to be here in 6 months. And, you know, and the continuity of care, I think, becomes really important.
Well, yeah, because, you know, they know a lot of really personal things about you. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you're talking to them about your medical conditions or, you know, your past medical conditions and, you know, surgeries and all of that stuff. Right. I mean, it takes a while to get that story out, especially if you're in your 60s now and, you know, you've got a long history.
Right.
So it takes a while to get that story out, and to have to redo that freaking story every 3 months or every 6 months or even every year is, you know, annoying.
It's, yeah, annoying, but it's also room for error,
yes.
which I think is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I don't remember things that happened 40 years ago. I mean, I just don't. I mean, it's if I don't have it written down, like, what surgery did I have? Did I even have surgery? I don't remember, you know? It's just not part of what I remember, so...
I really like knowing, too, the family relationships in the community. Mm. And so I know, you know, I'll recognize last names as being part of a family group. And I really like to say, hey, and, you know, tell your mom I said, hey.
Yes.
And yes. How are you doing? I heard you graduated from high school. Does that mean you're going taking classes at CR now?
Right.
You know, when are you going to follow me around? We grow nurses here.
That's so great.
Yeah.
So, no, and I think it really... It builds community, and that's part of what I think we have to do when we're in rural, remote places. We have to build community because we are fairly cut off, and we have to be able to rely on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So having that kind of safety net is, I think it's really important.
We also have surprising diversity in this community, because I know we discussed earlier that part of the... There's two special groups that my clinic would like to reach out to. One is the Spanish-speaking community. I'm fluent in medical Spanish, and like I said, I have a medical assistant who's what we call a heritage speaker or lifelong speaker. And some of my patients, when I was here in a previous practice, would call me the doctor with the white hair.
I love that.
There's no really good word for physician assistant in Spanish, and so they have an idea that I'm a perpetual student, which they like because they think I'm like still taking classes and still passing tests, which I am. I'm actually studying for my fifth round of boards.
Wow.
PAs have to take boards every 6 years, so
yeah,
I'm coming up on that. And but we really started looking at how we could advertise to that community. And we have advertisements on the radio bilingual. And we also reached out to some of the, you know, the focal community gathering points, and most specifically around Smith River, like the market there. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little burrito place there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, on Facebook, both in English and Spanish. And then some of our signage is in Spanish.
That's excellent.
And we're translating right now all of our forms into Spanish so that nobody has to wonder what they're signing, which is really important to me. And then, you know, the $99 private pay option for somebody without insurance, and that are our x-rays, brand new digital equipment is a series is, let's say if you fall and injure your wrist, is only $75. So for somebody who's, you know, maybe watching their pennies and stuff, that's a really good, affordable alternative.
It's incredibly affordable. I mean, when you take a look at some of the bills that come in
Yeah, we're about a tenth of what it would cost in an ER. So
wow.
And that's open to everybody. And that's not like a sales price. That's not a bait and switch. He's committed. We've had that same pricing in our Eureka clinic for 4 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So where is the clinic located in Crescent City?
We're at 286 M, as in Mary Street, which looks to me like 101 North, but right. I call it the intersection of Little Caesars and McDonald's. it's kind of in that area intentionally.
Okay.
We wanted to be closer to, you know, like where the tourists were and where the bulk of the people live in the downtown area as opposed to out near the other medical offices.
Mm-hmm.
It was a job, I think it was an unemployment office previously and a hardware store previously. So we did quite a bit of remodeling on it. And it's not only very functional, but it's beautiful and it's clean. And it's Dr. Wahadula has some expertise in interior decorating.
Oh, wow. So he's not only a great doctor, but
he's marvelously creative, man.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I love it.
And we're trying to make our signage to reflect a community. We have a billboard up on 101 North, kind of along Crescent Beach, that was done by a local graphic artist and photographs. I think one of them is one that I took, actually, my home. So, you know, we're trying to get people to understand that we're people that you know, we're part of this community, too.
Yeah.
I've been practicing here for 20 years, and I'm quite charmed by Crescent City.
And clearly people know who you are.
Oh, if
you've been here for 20 years.
They do. Almost every single patient we've seen, except for, you know, tourists who are passing through. I don't have to introduce myself. I don't even have to wear my name tag, although it's good form to do that.
Yeah, right.
So, and
how long has the clinic been open?
The clinic opened on, I think it was the 10th of October.
Oh.
So it's really just over a month.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of resources. I suture, we splint, we refer, we can refill prescriptions. That's one thing that's important to note. If there are any fire refugees from those terrible fires down south, sometimes when all you can do is grab the kids and the cat, you know, you leave your antihypertensive behind, we'd be glad to help with that. I give 1 month with two refills so that gives people some time to settle, or people new to the area who maybe didn't anticipate the doctor shortage.
Yes.
So we do refills to carry people and then help them get into the appropriate primary care people.
I just love the focus of this. You know, it's so about taking care of people, which, you know, my way of looking things is that's what medicine should be about. Healthcare should be about taking care of people.
Yeah, my colleagues in the Eureka Clinic and I spend a lot of time thinking about how we can get around barriers to care within the community. Say if we have a child who's got an ear infection, it's 7 o'clock and there's no pharmacies open, he's going to start carrying really very inexpensive, you know, like liquid antibiotics or maybe antibiotics in pill form if somebody has an urgent need, but there's no pharmacies open in town. And he's just ordered a diagnostic machine that will give us it takes about 8 minutes to get DNA identification of viruses, influenza A, influenza B, strep throat, which is a bacteria, and a couple other diseases so that we can take a swab and then 8 minutes later have a secure diagnosis.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
I mean,
it's amazing.
Does that even happen in a hospital?
I don't know what equipment they currently have.
Wow.
But, Yeah, but we'd really like to make it available to the community. So
he sounds like an amazing
Well,
man.
He's a physician. So that's the first thing, you know.
Yeah.
He's a physician, and he wants the tools that he needs to take the best care of a community that he can, and he provides it to his colleagues. We're kind of a physician-based practice, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, or healthcare-based practice.
So how many providers are working out of the clinic?
There's probably four or five nurse practitioners, mm-hmm. if you count the ones who kind of come maybe once a month or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's two physicians. He also, in Eureka, has an associated lab where it's not really known too much in California, and I'm not familiar with the Oregon law, but in California you can order blood testing on yourself to a certain degree. Hmm. I know, surprising, huh?
It's surprising, shocking.
So let's say, you know, I'm wondering about my thyroid and I can't get in to see my doctor for 3 months. I can go in and order thyroid testing. So he has a lab in the Eureka office, not the Crescent City office, but the thyroid testing that somebody might most want to order is only $22 for a test.
Wow.
You know, hemoglobin A1C, which is a common way of looking at diabetes, mm-hmm. Is about, I think it's about $22. And in hospitals, that's usually hundreds of dollars
for a test.
It's not only flexible and patient-centric that we tell the community that they have this right in California, but it's also really affordable. And you can't have your insurance pay for your blood tests if you're ordering them on yourself, but if you decide you want to pay for them yourself.
And frankly, you know, you can. $20, $25 is not a huge amount.
No, it's incredibly lot cheaper. It's probably worth driving down to Eureka. I would, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, people drive down there to go to Costco. So
yeah, exactly.
Why not?
Exactly. It's just, it just makes me smile.
I know. Isn't it great?
It really does. It just, you know, because it's the people who, those of us who are living on fixed incomes and, you know, people who don't have a lot of money coming in that are typically the ones that have to do without healthcare. And it, you know, it seems like, you know, countrywide, it is really starting to get some attention that this is something that we really need address ourselves to.
I also think that rural folk are more self-reliant. Mm-hmm. And I think if one kind of knows what one needs in medicine, then sometimes it doesn't take a lot of, you know, it shouldn't take a lot of resources to acquire that.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying everybody should do medicine on themselves, because it's an ever-changing, a way more complicated subject than Google will ever be able to tell
ever.
us.
Ever, yes.
But sometimes you just, it's apparent what somebody needs. They know what they need.
Exactly.
And how do you just get it in a really efficient and affordable way?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I used to have a doctor because I would get urinary tract infections all the time for whatever reason. And I had a really good doctor. And, you know, all I would have to do is say, I'm getting another one. And she'd say, come in, let me just get the sample and I'll write you a prescription.
Let's just do it. Make it easy.
Yeah. And then she would even give me pills like, okay, so this is a pill that you can take if you start to feel like it and then get in to see me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it would be like, you know, within 12 hours, I'd be doubled over. I couldn't stand up. And you know your own body. If you've you've lived in it for, you know, however many years, you know what it feels like when you're coming down with something.
Right. I understand.
Unless, of course, you know, it's a case where your daughter is bringing germs down from British Columbia, Canada. And then you're not really sure what that is. Yeah,
that's where we can help.
Yeah, that happens every Christmas. Every Christmas I get Canadian germs in my house.
You got to watch those airports. They're
deadly. Oh, man, I'm telling you. Well, they drive down. It's
gas stations.
And they're bringing Canadian germs.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Everybody has their own germs.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I like to do. I like to ask the kids what school they go to, and I have the germ pools recorded by school district or individual school, so I can tell who is likely to have what.
Oh, that is so smart.
Yeah, it works really well in Crescent City.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
But anyway.
So what are some of your favorite things about being a physician's assistant?
I never wanted to be a doctor, but I did really like medicine. I was initially looking at veterinary medicine. And when I was helping a friend who is a pathology assistant, which is a kind of an extinct variation on physician assistant, she was doing autopsies, and I was kind of helping her with that. And she said, "You should be a PA." And I said, "Like, I want to work with dead people my whole life." And she said, "No, most PAs have living patients." And so I can't tell you how that just clicked. I felt like the clouds mm-hmm. parted and the finger of God pointed at me, mm-hmm. and unicorns sang, and you know, rainbow sprouted, and I was off and running on that. And so what I like about it is that I can do a lot independently. But I have a good resource, not only the physician I work with as my attending physician, but also my other nurse practitioner, PA colleagues, and other physician colleagues. And then I feel like I can advocate best for the patient. And in this particular setting, I'm allowed to actually practice to my ultimate best. And that I don't really have a lot of reasons why I can't do the best that I want to do for a patient. There's not, no offense to hospital administrators, but there's no reasons why I can't just move forward with what the patient and I think they need to get better.
I think that's remarkable.
It's kind of like the Doritos of medicine, I call it. I mean, you can eat a whole lot of them, but where what we do, it's really, really great, but the patient also needs to partner with a primary care, and that's probably the healthier eating in that analogy.
Right.
But I think with the team of us being available and having a lot of great resources, plus the primary care provider who can actually do things maybe perhaps more in depth, like order an MRI, which urgent care is not really allowed to do, or what else could they do? Probably, follow up with a patient to, if we instigate a plan, then they can follow up and decide whether that plan is the one that's working or does it need to be modified. So I think we work best together, all three of us. It's a triad is always more stable.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it just makes sense. If the emphasis is on actually serving the patient, that's what you want to do, and you want to make sure that patient is actually getting well.
Oh, yeah, right? That would be part of it, too, yeah.
That would be an important part, I would think.
That would be.
Is the patient getting better?
Yeah.
So I would assume then that you get lots of Spanish-speaking clients in there?
We do in Eureka, mm-hmm. because one of the physicians down there is a native speaker. We don't get so much up here, and I think it's because I think we've only been open a month.
Exactly.
And the community is conservative with who they go to see for mm-hmm. their health care, and mm-hmm. I'm not completely sure that they know that I'm here yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody in town knows that I'm part of this effort,
mm-hmm.
and it's really
they will soon.
Yeah, they will.
We'll make sure of that.
Well, it's great to walk into a room and somebody goes, "What are you doing here?"
Yeah,
I say, "Well, I brought you this new clinic."
Oh,
so
that's really special. It really is.
Right.
Yeah. So, what kind of services does the clinic offer? What do they cover?
Well, it's called ambulatory care, and mm-hmm. there's in our brochures on our website, it has big lists of it. So this would not be the place to go if you think you're having a heart attack, or it wouldn't be the place to go if perhaps you had a fall and lost consciousness or something. That kind of care needs emergency room. But if you were cutting onions on a mandolin and you got a cut on your finger, or if, you know, you were concerned about, you know, having fallen and injured your wrist, or, you know, wondering why your shoulder is hurting, or having problems maybe sleeping at night. So we can do the diagnostics and then set a plan in motion. And if somebody can follow up with their primary if they need to, or maybe it's self-limiting. We're looking at cold and flu season. So influenza is a big deal. Colds are coming up, you know, like strep throat, mono. We see a lot of mono in Humboldt County. You know, those kind of acute illnesses. Maybe you need a tetanus shot because you had a dog bite.
With flu coming up, I'm sure that you can do flu shots. But if somebody feels like they're getting the flu or coming down with it,
yeah, that's important to know. We do not do flu shots. Flu shots are available now most easily in the pharmacies.
Okay.
And for anybody who says they got sick from taking their flu shot, most of the time you got sick from the guy who was sitting next to you in the waiting room while you were waiting to get your flu shot. So I advocate getting flu shots in the public health department, because that's not where sick people are. Sick people are in pharmacies and clinics and hospital ERs.
Okay.
So, but influenza is a different kind of virus than, you know, your average cold virus. It during the 1918 flu epidemic, influenza killed 1/6 of the world's population in 6 weeks, and mostly young, healthy people.
1/6?
It can be deadly and miserable. So what I'd recommend is that everybody, unless you have a really good reason to not get a flu shot, certainly consider getting one. But you know how we are with colds, and we say, oh, you know, drink more fluids, rest, that kind of stuff, wait. It's, you know, antibiotics don't treat viruses. Mm-hmm. But with influenza, there's a window of opportunity the first 48 hours from onset of illness. And I time that from onset of fever.
Okay.
And then that's where Tamiflu or one of the anti-influenza drugs would be really helpful.
Okay.
And so that's not a wait and let it pass kind of illness. That's if you get a sudden onset of a high fever, sweats, chills, headache, sometimes nausea, dry cough, then that's something that you might want to get diagnosed really quickly, because the antivirals for influenza help people get better slightly faster, but definitely help people stay alive. And the flu in certain populations of vulnerable people has a high morbidity and mortality. So
that's fascinating information. I am actually one of those people that doesn't get a flu shot, because I feel like I get sick when I get a flu shot.
Right.
So that's actually fascinating information.
That's my theory. I don't know if I have data to back it up.
But that's okay. It's a good theory. I like that.
Yeah.
but so within the 48-hour window, if you feel like you're
from onset of
symptoms,
like more severe illness than usual, so not really like a cold. It's kind of like the difference, like a cold's a mouse and influenza is like an elephant.
And
people will say oftentimes a train hit me.
Uh-huh.
And that's almost universal that they say that. So that from the onset of fever, you have 48 hours to give somebody some meaningful help.
And if people miss that window of opportunity, what can be done?
Then it's mostly comfort measures like anti-nausea medicine, maybe cough syrup, plus minus codeine if somebody can take that. Appropriate dosing of ibuprofen and Tylenol, you know, kind of depends on what comorbidities they have. About 2 or 3 weeks out, we start looking for bacterial pneumonias. Depends on the clinical picture, really. Then we have x-ray, so we look for pneumonias all the time in the clinic.
What about getting pneumonia shots? Does that help in terms of...
A pneumonia shot protects against one type of pneumonia that's particularly severe, and it doesn't really help with all the other types of pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
But certain people who have risk factors, like perhaps they're missing a spleen from an old motor vehicle accident or something, should definitely get a pneumococcal pneumonia shot. But that's not going to protect against all types of pneumonia.
And I thought there were two different pneumonia shots. One is a para something or other. No.
Yeah. I think that's mostly an older one and then a new improved one. And then they try and use the improved one on people who are immunocompromised or maybe older.
Okay. So if you are starting to experience some symptoms, probably a really good idea is to come into urgent care, right?
Yeah, that's why we're here. We're open from 9. We take patients from 9 o'clock in the morning till 6:30. Oh, and another thing about urgent care is it can sometimes be time intensive because you're kind of waiting in line with other people. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's no waiting at our clinic. Because we just opened and we're just growing our numbers right now. But all it's going to take is one influenza outbreak, and we're probably, you have to wait your turn. However, Redwood Urgent Care offers what's called a Zip Pass. And if you go online, then it starts at midnight of the day that you would want to be seen. So let's say I want to be seen today, then at midnight last night, I could have gone online and I could have said, look, I want to be there at 2:45. I'm going to take one of those Zip Passes. And so what happens is you get kind of prioritized. So it's a really sweet little way of getting cuts in line, I guess.
I love that.
And so somebody is
brilliant.
Yeah. I don't know, 5 or 6 of them at our other clinic, but this clinic, we have like 12 of them. You know, they're wide open. And anybody who's got access to the computer and has a little bit of savvy can make their wait more manageable. And so, you know, that way you can fit the visit into the rest of your day and not be inconvenienced.
Because it is kind of rough if you're not sure. You know, you don't actually have an appointment, so, you know, you don't know how long you're going to be there. And there's nothing worse than sitting there with a sick kid and...
Right. Yeah, that would be a great time to utilize those Zip Passes. They're really quite popular in Eureka. They go fast at about midnight, maybe 10 minutes later, they're all gone.
No kidding.
Yeah, but they're not really known. They're not expected up here because the walk-in clinic doesn't do that. And I don't think the other urgent care does either. But that's a sweet little thing.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, our website has a lot about our scope of practice. It's really kind of helpful.
This is just... It really, I don't know, just it's warm fuzzies for me to hear about something like this. You know, it's medicine the way I think medicine really should be practiced and, you know, taking into consideration the client and what's best for them and how to work with their schedules. And I mean, it's remarkable, really.
Yeah. Our model that we use at Redwood Urgent Care developed by an emergency room physician who actually did the software for the electronic medical records. And I love it because I can chart in about 90 seconds, so I don't have to feel like I'm trudging through this endless clicking boxes. It is provider-centric, so I don't have to put billing information to see vitals, which has been a problem in other EMRs. And I can give the patient what we call an after-visit summary that has instructions that are really, really helpful to read at 2 o'clock in the morning if you're wondering if what your pathway should be, things to look for. Perhaps that might mean somebody's worsening, expected follow-up, special notes from me suggesting perhaps Tylenol and ibuprofen dosing, things like that. So we have, the billing is easy. The charting is easy, the encounter for the patient is easy, and it's all designed to get a patient through in less than an hour.
Oh, wow.
So not only affordable, but really accessible.
That's just...
I know. Dr. Wahadula's vision is amazing. As he says, it's a model that works quite well, but really, you know, he's our leader, and we appreciate that he's been able to bring this to the North Coast.
So does Dr. Wahadula come... to the clinic? Is he?
He lives in Sacramento. He's in practice in some of the hospitals there, but he comes up here. It's kind of I would say every 6 weeks maybe, and he kind of breezes through the clinic. Usually they're really brief visits because he's wanted at 2 clinic sites now, but he almost always brings this up, something that makes our practice better.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, what amazing insight into what medicine can be.
Right. Well, he thinks a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, that comes from his family history. I think that he's been trained to make it work. I don't know how else to say it.
Right. So. Yeah, you know, I look at medical care and I look historically and, you know, hundreds of years ago, several hundred years ago, there were people who were part of your community who were your healers, medicine people. And it's gotten so away from that in so many instances that, you know, everything is kind of specialized and you go to the hospital or, you know, but it's not part of your community. And it feels to me like we need to be moving sort of back into that model of being a part of the community and being the natural place that people turn to and being accessible and not hideously expensive and, you know.
Economically accessible.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And still have value, I think, for the individual providers so that they want to stay. I think if I was a fourth-year medical student at Stanford, I would seriously look at this place. Again, what community, I mean, this is the best community to make a difference, but also quality of life with this particular practice, you know, in the terms of the EMR that we have, in the terms of what we're allowed to do.
What is EMR?
Electronic medical records.
Okay.
So that we don't have to have the computers really be the focus of the visit. We can have the patient be the focus of the visit.
Because I have noticed that the computer...
I'm an old timer, so I don't even bring the computer in the room.
Uh-huh.
So
I have noticed that recently. It's a kind of a funny thing. You know, you're talking to the doctor, but the doctor kind of has his back to you because he's typing into the computer.
Right. Yeah, not my style. But I've read some studies that suggest that electronic medical records have decreased patient or provider productivity by about 30%.
No.
So they really were billing and IT centric and not so much patient centric. And that really is a problem with quality of life for providers. That's why you have providers who only work maybe 3 days a week or they go on vacations every 6 weeks because it's when you really are trained and called to interact with humans and you're all of a sudden have to interact with a machine, it's not very fun.
It's not what you signed up for.
Right.
Not what you thought you signed up for anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid and, you know, we had a family doctor and that was the doctor that was... Generally, everybody, all of our neighbors saw the doctor. And, you know, he made house calls because that's what doctors did back in those days.
Right.
And if you were sick, you know, your mother wasn't going to take you out to the doctor.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You're in bed with a fever or whatever, and
sure.
the doctor was going to come to you. And, you know, it just, the focus really was on the people who needed the care.
Right.
It wasn't on, you know.
You can get such great insights from doing home visits. I did that in my family practice days.
Did you?
Which was about 10 years ago. But Dr. Casper, of course, longtime general practitioner in the community, did home visits. And there's probably Dr. Hawthorne did too. There's a number of great physicians of the past who are that connected to their community.
And it feels better. You know, if your doctor comes to you, it just feels...
Well, the doctor is also taking notes of the environment and I think insight is gained. And, you know, that's why this person is reacting like this and that's why this person is reacting like that. And of course they can't do what I asked him because this is the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, they did a study actually in a medical school in Kansas, and the study is old, probably about 20 years ago, where family practice residents in the university clinic would have to go out to the homes of their patients who no-showed and to see what the barriers to care were that kept the patient from being able to show up for an appointment at a certain time. And I think it goes back, I think there's a lesson here for this community is that people are not always anchored in time the same way. And what the residents found when they went to their patient's home is there were no clocks, there were no calendars, you know. Maybe there wasn't gas in the car on that day, that maybe there were, you know, maybe, you know, somebody was sicker and that person got the attention. Maybe they didn't have phones. You know, this is an old study, about 20 years old, but I think
but
that also
still relevant.
Also relevant to rural living is that you can't assume that your patient is anchored in time or in the same literacy level that the provider is. I know that I've taken care of people out of Klamath, vets who, you know, for probably PTSD reasons and a lot of reasons that are really complex, that actually live up in the hills. And it's not like they have a cabin up in the hills. They live up in the hills like mountain men. Mm-hmm. And that's where they feel most comfortable. Mm-hmm. But that's really, really hard for them to interface with a rigid medical system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they need to have somebody who gets that their life might not be the same as everybody else in towns.
Yeah, because it's gotten, you know, pretty cookie cutter, you know.
Right.
And that's just not the way we are.
Right.
The reality is that we are not cookies.
Right.
Cut
and we
by
shouldn't
the same.
And we shouldn't be.
No.
And that's why I like urgent care, is that I think it's more likely to be, like, you can just be driving by and then think of something. It's, mm-hmm. It's really very in the moment. And I think there's some studies that suggest that family practice should be like that, but it's really hard, I think, for a clinic to set up just 100% walk-in hours.
Yeah,
it becomes pandemonium at some point. But then the studies also suggest that settles out and it actually becomes quite a workable system.
Really?
But I don't see very many people willing to take it on.
Well, don't you think that sort of nationally we need to rethink?
In a big way, yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, totally.
Because it's just, you know, I mean, it's working for some people, but I think there are a lot of people who... The way we do medicine and healthcare in this country, it's just not really working for them.
No, not really.
What would you, if you could change medicine in any way possible?
I'd make it easier to get into nurse practitioner and PA school. Okay. That's the number one thing I would think of. It is, you know, hugely expensive. My education, although it was elite, was also very affordable,
mm-hmm.
with the salary that I made after. And I never felt like it was a burden, but I see young people really burdened. I see young doctors really burdened. And I think that I would take a lot of the hospital and clinic systems. I think clinic systems like Opendoor are really great, but I also think they're heavy on middle management. And I think part of that is perhaps their way of meeting requirements that are imposed on them, perhaps by Medi-Cal or Medicare. So there's too much bureaucratic focus, and we really have gotten away from the essential relationship of patient and provider. So I would listen more to the providers, and I would listen more to the providers who, and allow them to set up their days, you know, within certain boundaries probably, but I would let, these are really talented, bright people. I would let them run. I would ask them, what does it take to do your best effort?
Because it seems like I one doctor in particular that I went to, not for long, would literally give you 10 minutes. And when the 10 minutes was up, you were out the door.
Yeah.
We don't have time to deal with this.
Right. That's not effective medicine. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because especially if you are elderly and, you know, have maybe some cognitive issues and have a hard time saying what you mean, sometimes it might take you 10 minutes to get to what the issue is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right? And so suddenly you're like in the middle of, you know, explaining your issue and your doctor's saying...
There's also something called the doorknob phenomenon, which you never really figure out why a patient is really there until you put your hand on the doorknob to go.
Isn't that interesting?
You're kind of auditioned at first, and then you get to...
Isn't that interesting?
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's true. I mean, I've noticed it with my husband, that, you know, I'll say, okay, I have a meeting, I'm out the door, and I will literally be putting my hand on the doorknob to leave, and he'll ask me a question.
And then you'll, get to the meat of it. Yeah.
No, exactly. It's so funny.
I sit and I fold my hands and I listen. And while my hands are folded, my mouth is closed.
Oh,
and
love
I think that should be taught in medical school.
Yeah. Because I think people really want to talk about themselves.
Sure.
And if they're there for a medical healthcare reason, they have something to talk about.
Right. I think there's value in what they tell you.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be taught again.
Yeah.
I mean, we were taught that at one time, but I think we're just too hung up on the computers and the time, and we're trying to make it fit us, and it really, it's so easy to go back to a patient-centric model.
And so much more satisfying.
Completely.
For everybody involved. Lynn, we are almost out of time, which is always remarkable to me. It always takes me by surprise that the hour goes by and I'm suddenly like, so are there any last words you'd like to leave people with? You want to repeat the hours of the clinic?
Yeah, Redwood Urgent Care in Crescent City is at 286 M Street, which is also 101 North, very near McDonald's and right across from Little Caesars. We are open from 9 a.m. to 6:30. We take our last patient at 6:30. We have on-site x-ray. We have some great diagnostic capabilities that aren't really available. These are the same caring people that have been taking care of this community for a while. I would like to reach out to the migrante community in Smith River by saying, se habla español. And I would like to welcome the Native community. I would like to welcome the elders in the community. We accept Medicare. Unfortunately, at this time, we do not accept partnership, but we have an excellent private pay option. That's probably about one-tenth of our competitors in cost. And we're going to be here for a while. Come see our new beautiful clinic. Come be a part of this exciting thing.
And do you have a web page in case people want to
We do. If you Google Redwood Urgent Care in Eureka, you should be able to find it. And then I've been also putting pamphlets and brochures around town, stuff like that. All of the primary care providers and dentists are aware of our presence.
Excellent. So. And can I assume that people from Oregon are allowed to come in too?
Uh-huh.
Great.
Absolutely.
Just in case. You
know? Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, we have an urgent care here, but, you know, I like the sound of yours.
Yeah, that we got some
really
very nice Yelp readings, so I appreciate Yelp ratings,
that.
I guess.
I love that.
Yeah, very nice. Very
well,
kind.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Lynn. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I'm thrilled to death that it's up and running.
Yay.
Yay.
Come see us if you need to.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, say hi in Safeway. That's fine.
That sounds great. And thank you for listening. Knowing where to go for immediate care is important, especially in small communities like ours. Make sure you know where your nearest urgent care and hospital are. If you enjoy listening to our programming, please go to our website. There you'll find podcasts of our various shows, the weekly schedule, a volunteer application, and a membership form. You can also let us know what types of programming you'd like to see more of. We are KCIW Curry Coast Community Radio, and we'd like you to join our growing family of supporters. This is Candace Michelle. Thank you.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.